Okay, we've made it. Episode 2 of what is now titled The Memory Core. We did it, guys.
Amaris was right.
Amaris was right. We did it. We got to episode 2. Holy crap. So yeah, there were a couple things we wanted to talk about today. Nothing too big. One of the things I wanted to mention first, though, were a couple of corrections. And most of that was on my end because I ran my mouth way too much and flubbed over some things. So at one point, I think instead of saying backwater, I might have said Blackwater, which is either that really cool cartoon show about the pirates or that really weird group of mercenaries in Iraq that are really fucking weird. The other thing is when I was talking about fighting games and making that comparison, I accidentally said 30 seconds instead of 30 frames. So to refresh, when you are blocked on a reversal uppercut, it is 30 frames of recovery on block rather than 30 seconds. There being 60 frames in a second, therefore it would be half a second recovery. So that's that out of the way. I'm sure there'll be more.
I can't believe you messed that up.
I know.
You are a terrible human being.
You're right.
Pretty sure Comstar's watching you now.
Oh, I know, right? It's a funny point. Originally, we decided to name ourselves the First Circuit. We thought, oh, that's really clever. That's a really good one. I haven't seen anyone call themselves the First Circuit.
Yeah, and then a quick search later.
Yep. Somebody else wanted to name the First Circuit. And apparently, he's actually a pretty prolific podcaster. He's had a lot of good people that he's interviewed, including Blaine Pardo. So we had to quickly backtrack and try and figure out what we wanted to do. We also are trying to figure out a good catchphrase to end the podcast. There is a really cool Canadian dude who is a machinist on YouTube, and he ends all of his episodes with the catchphrase, "Keep your dick in a vice." And there's something about it that's just so good. We're trying to figure out what to say. And we were like, oh, man, yeah, Amaris is right. No, that's not right. Fuck Harmony Gold. No, I can't do that one.
Keep your Mackie torso cannon in a vice.
Yeah, no. So I think the best one I came up with was, and just remember, folks, ride the bell curve. But that's just, I don't know, that's not quite right either.
So. I don't even remember what I came up with mine. This is why I should not drink before we do this stuff.
Yeah, we had a lot of bad ideas. By the way, we both had two very strong beers. So we're going to see how this turns out. But yeah, there are a couple things we want to discuss. And of course, I mean, there's always ideas brewing, and including discussing aesthetics and the influences of Battletech that we've picked up or the things that we've noticed. And I've got
what we like and don't like about Destiny.
Yeah, yeah. And what we like and what we don't like about Destiny and our previous experiences with role-playing games is probably going to be on the table today. But we even got weird tangents like, how does Emerson, Lincoln, Palmer's Tarkus tank fit into Battletech? And there is a story behind that. I don't even know if Dan knows that one.
No, I don't know that one.
Yeah, so we'll get to that at some point.
We'll call the segment Story Time.
Yeah, Story Time. but yeah. So for those of you who are part of the Kickstarter for the Battletech Clan Invasion box set, or those of you who are just part of the boards or just wondering what's going on,
if you're not in on it, please get in on it because it is awesome.
Yeah. So we were dropped with the beta of MechWarrior Destiny, which is a rules light version of the Battletech role-playing game.
Say like 4.5 it'd be at this point.
It feels like a completely new edition. So almost like it'd be like a fifth edition.
Just branching out, yeah.
Yeah. It uses the Q system, which, from what I can tell, it was a Catalyst invention. It was in Shadowrun Anarchy before this.
I thought they used it in something else. Yeah, I never played Shadowrun.
Yeah, and then before that,
someone did bring it up.
Yeah, so it was Shadowrun Anarchy, and then before that, it was their Cosmic Patrol, which have been fairly well received. Although Shadowrun Anarchy is very different from the Shadowrun main game, and much like MechWarrior Destiny, MechWarrior Destiny is very different from A Time of War. And I think there are both pluses and minuses to that. And I think Dan is super interested in it.
Yeah, I was just going to ask, where do you think both of us stand on it? Yeah. I am actually really interested in it, only because even when I got back into Dungeons & Dragons, I'm the weird guy. Like, I kind of liked 4th edition a little bit.
Yeah.
Because of how it was built. And this kind of reminds me that I still think Destiny's better than that, but yeah. It gives me that same vibe.
Right, right. I'm leery on it. And the reason why I'm leery is not so much because it is rules light, but because how it is geared in telling its story. And my big role-playing experience is actually with Pathfinder. And Pathfinder itself is sort of Dungeons & Dragons 3.5 after, I think, Wizards of the Coast put out Dungeons & Dragons 3.0 on the Creative Commons license. And so the guys over at Paizo then use that as the core to make Pathfinder. And so that's my experience. But, well, let's, before we get into what we like and what we don't like, I don't, Dan, if you want to kind of go through it, we got the Destiny PDF pulled up.
Yeah.
And, yeah. So
there might be some blank spaces a little bit because I'm kind of glancing through this to see where we can start. I think to start it out, this was an idea I brought up, but
it's the arrangement of how Callus likes to write it's rules books.
Yeah, well, the arrangement's bad, but you got to forgive them because I know it's a beta, so yeah. They are going to move it around.
Yeah.
Please, for the love of God, put an index in this. Don't Total Warfare this, please. Yeah. But
yeah, it's one of those things. It's been noted a couple times, and I think Dan and I both feel this way. Since the guys over at Catalyst started doing their like rules compendium. You know, the idea that there's Total Warfare, Tech Manual, so on and so forth. Their presentation of the rule books is phenomenal. They look great. And they're very explanative. And they're just the fit and finish is great. You know, it's like that perfect piece of furniture where all of the corners are square and all the edges are eased with a gentle round over. Everything looks really nice. However, it can be a real bitch to try and find something you're looking for. And sometimes things aren't listed the way you think they are, and you're really trying to find what's where.
Well, since they've started moving away from PDF releases and going more in print, that's kind of gotten better.
Yeah.
Because you kind of have to get out of that search bar that you're used to.
Yeah. and so it's one of those things. And I don't mean to say that to shit on the editors or the guys.
Yeah, we're definitely not shitting on them because I've loved their products they've put out lately.
Yeah, we are definitely huge fans. And I think, you know, even though the Jihad, I think it was more how we feared it was going to turn out rather than how it actually turned out. You know, I mean, everything they've done, yeah. I mean, the books look really good. And so that's not where we're coming from. We're definitely behind the Catalyst team. It's just, for whatever reason, something about the layout, there's this je ne sais quoi that is missing on how the books flow. And I don't pretend to know an easy answer behind it. It's just something about it's not right.
Okay. So let's see, where are we going to start? So at the beginning of the book, well, getting into the rules, like Destiny is obviously supposed, at least in my opinion, you probably know more about the rules than I do because I spent more time playing with construction. Mm-hmm. But the idea I get from it is it's supposed to play more like a live action novel or like one of those cheesy like 80s movies like Commando.
Yeah.
You watch, you know, because you're not tracking ammo, anything like that. You're just, you're going in, you're fighting, you got your one-liners kind of deal. So what I thought would be a good idea in the beginning of the book, because Catalyst loves to put fiction in their books now, at least a lot more than like the older stuff did.
Yeah.
I can't really recall like a lot of the older books with it, but that's besides the point.
Well, they'll have like that opening fiction that I think has been around for...
It's usually like your Tuardi Innersphere or...
Yeah, at least since the field manuals, if not earlier, they've had that in what's a source book, but not a storyline-driven source book. It's got that opening fiction. It's a couple pages.
Yeah, but I feel like they could put that to better use with Destiny, because what they could do is they could take the fiction, which is called Dragon's Lair in the beginning. I don't want to get too much into it because I know it's, I don't know, like classified, I guess you could call it that. But what they should do is maybe in between, like before like a major event happens, like let's say there's like a shootout or something like that, they should break it up and put in the interaction between the game master and the players. They kind of lay out like what they're thinking of in the creative process of putting it together. Yeah. which would be their way of introducing, like, yeah, our rules are kind of vague, but this is the way, like, we kind of interpret the game going.
Yeah, yeah. Well, and it's tough, too, because Dragon's Lair, without getting into spoilers, it's sort of like part three of the short stories that came with the Beginner's box set and the Game of Armor Combat box set. You know, this follows Durant Carlyle, who is the father of Grayson Carlyle. Like, this, that's what they're going for. But yeah, I think one of the things that would be great is that this is, it would be nice to see these stories fit in with, like, how to play the game and, like, well, what they do.
In the box sets, the fiction itself, like, sets the tone,
yeah,
of what the game is, like, supposed to feel like outside of the number crunching and dice rolling, because it, you know, the fiction, it puts the image in your head and it shows you how, like, a battle mech actually fights, you know. And I feel like Destiny could accomplish that with their fiction, and kind of as a way to touch on, you know, the gameplay and the rules behind it. Is I know they have examples in the book, but it's, there's not too many of it. And with a game this vague, I kind of feel like you need to expand on that.
Yeah.
You can't just, I don't know, that thread that's on the website right now, I forgot the guy who brought up the point, but basically you play a plot point and you could be like, let's say you're in this room, you know, it's a trap, gas goes off, and you did some really poor planning as a character.
Well, and this goes back to part of how this system works too.
Yeah. And it's basically like, well, I'm just going to throw out a plot point and I pull a gas mask out of my ass.
Yeah. Oh, we're going to get to,
what, we're going to get more into it, but this is kind of like where I'm getting into with the fiction, where they could kind of say, like, we don't want those situations to happen. We want you guys to actually have a non-min-max experience with this. Like, you know, you want to have the situation where it's like, I'm going to make a semi-decent decision. I'm going to pull a cloth out, pour some water on it, put it on my face, and see if I can at least get out of here with taking as small amounts of damage as I can to my body, which obviously won't do much depending on what it is, but it's definitely a lot better than I'm pulling a gas mask out of nowhere.
Yeah, yeah. So, you know, the way that the PDF is laid out, I mean, it kind of gets into a couple of things. It gets into sort of the rules of how the game works, which is a good idea. I think rules first is really potent, because it gives you an idea of what you want to achieve when you start doing character creation.
Mm-hmm.
Whereas a lot of other game systems do, you know, character creation first, and then the rules. And what's nice about Destiny is that it makes character creation very easy, versus what's going on with A Time of War. And so, for those of you who are not very familiar, A Time of War is very, it's very number crunchy. And I think
the results are good.
Yeah. I mean, to be honest, one of the things I wish, what I would like to see is a new edition of Time of War that addresses the critiques of the current system, because the A Time of War game system is very powerful. It lets you do a lot of things, and it lets you simulate a lot of things very clearly, and lets you kind of like come up with things and how you would combine skills to achieve something. But my main complaints with A Time of War is that,
well, we had a good experience.
Yeah, we had a good experience.
We really did.
The character creation is very laborious, in a way that I think is detrimental, especially compared to, say, how character creation is in Pathfinder.
It's enough to push people away.
Yeah, because in Pathfinder, you could do your first session with your group, and the GM, whose experience is helping you kind of come up with a character and making sure that everything's legal and you know, square. With A Time of War, it feels like, oh, man, I mean, it just...
There's not much you can do with hand-holding in that book.
Yeah, there's like a whole day. And I think the other big thing that gets to me is also how experience is gained. You know, they make it sound like experience should be like gained, you know, 10 or 15 points at a time. But when it takes 200 experience points to level up a skill, oh man, well, what's the point? I mean, you'll spend, you know, 20 sessions trying to get anywhere. And that's not really how, and Grant, you can do whatever you want, but it just sort of, the way it's scaled, it just doesn't feel good. And I think part of the problem too is that you know, and someone else mentioned this when we were talking about the autocannons, is that you can always house rule something, which is true. You can always house rule something. If you don't like something, you can just do whatever you want and you're fine. But my big concern is that rules should be sort of a lingua franca.
Sorry about that.
You should be able to kind of go from group to group and not have to worry about what you house ruled and how things work. And it's nice knowing that that rules can be universal. And, addressing these problems is, I think, worth doing. But, and to be fair, I don't know if they will now that Destiny's out. And I think there is a concern that the Catalyst group is not a large enough team to do two things at once.
Yeah, it's either going to use Destiny as their main RPG, or Destiny is basically going to be the Alpha Strike of their RPG.
And that's not it's not against Catalyst, you know, because I get it. Like, it's small. This isn't the days of the 80s and 90s, 70s, 80s, and 90s, when a gaming company could have, you know, 20 people on staff and you can pump out products. It's not that way anymore. You just can't do it. And so Catalyst uses a lot of freelance writers, which is just the reality of it. It's either how you do it, or you become Games Workshop, or you don't exist. And so the question is, is there going to be enough support to handle both systems? And I think that is a fair question. You know, is it going to actually work out that way?
Which they did say they're not going to drop a Time of War. They did say that's not their end goal. But, you know, I mean, we're fans. We're going to be skeptical.
Yeah. I mean, I get it. You can only do so many things at once. And I think someone mentioned, you know, concerns about support. And I get it. Like, there's support in all of these different books, in a sense of their story hook lines for Time of War, their maybe characters for a Time of War, or certain things that are usable for a Time of War for different, you know, famous NPCs. But you know, one of the things that Time of War is missing, that also MechWarrior 3rd Edition was missing, is that there aren't any modules. And I get that, in a sense, you know, as a GM, you should be able to come up with your own storyline. But what makes, for example, like early Dungeons and Dragons or Pathfinder or even modern Dungeons and Dragons or a lot of other RPGs very fulfilling is that you can grab a book off the shelf that is an adventure module. And if you're a GM, it can help you through it, or it can at least give you an idea of how a story should be told or how the game system works, or story ideas. And I think of the times I've played, you know, a game, the Dungeons and Dragons or Pathfinder, and you start with a module and then it grows beyond that and it becomes something else. But you start with those characters, you start in that module. And if you're a new game master or dungeon master, having a scaffold to help you out with the game is huge. You know, it's hard if you're new at the system to be thrown into something. And it can be really off-putting if you don't have those resources. And maybe that's a silly complaint. Maybe it's not something that's very real, and maybe I just need to just suck it up. But I don't know, something about it, like, there just feels like they're just, you know, a couple adventure modules and not like free RPG day scenarios.
In
like,
summary, if a Time of War was actually supported, it would probably be a much better system.
Yeah. And again, the support doesn't mean, in my mind, support doesn't mean throwing a bunch of things in the back of a source book. I think a support means making sure the game's in print, making sure that a Time of War companion is in print.
Well, scenario books.
And scenario books.
Yeah. Like, I mean, the box sets, you've always had scenario books.
Yeah. And I think somewhere I saw it mentioned that scenario books aren't a big seller for BattleTech, because, you know, the BattleTech board game itself is, you know, it's like 4v4, you know, last man standing wins.
Yeah.
But when you've got actual characters you're making and you've got something to achieve based on a module, it's different.
Which is where Destiny's probably, in all honesty, going to shine. But it is worth mentioning that in Destiny, you can convert from a Time of War to Destiny. And this is off the top of my head because I don't have the section in front of me, but I believe from like Alpha Strike or a game of Armored Combat through there too. So it is compatible with every system. And I think Destiny itself is probably way more compatible with the other games than like a Time of War could be.
Yeah.
Because we didn't get too deep into it.
No, we didn't get a chance to do too much.
We didn't get too far into it, but when we did play, we weren't using like a Time of Wars combat. Like, we just basically took our characters and played Battletech.
Like, yeah. Well, we didn't, I mean, one of the things about a Time of War, and it's not a bad thing, is that when it comes to interpersonal combat, you know, is between character and character, not between mech and mech. A Time of War tries to be very realistic. And that's kind of one of the things I like about it, in a sense, is that, you know, in Dungeons and Dragons, you know, your fighter has 50 hit points and you take 49 points of damage. You know, unless you're playing with some of the optional rules, you're basically still as effective at 1 point of health as you were at 50 points of health. You know, you get hit
Battle by Battletech flips the bird at that.
Yeah. You get hit by that dragon and you just, oh, okay, I'll just take a health potion, whatever. In Battletech, you lose an eye.
You lose an eye and that's that.
Yeah. And it's not coming back. So yeah, there's something about that that's actually pretty cool. There's actual consequence behind, you know, making those decisions, which I think is interesting. And that's why, you know, combat is so complicated in a Time of War, because it is so lethal. You know, if you're going to engage in this, it's got to be as serious as possible. Where, you know, as Dungeons and Dragons is, you go into the cave or the dungeon, you fight goblins, you find treasure, you profit. You know?
Yeah. Well, in Battletech, your side skills like negotiation and language actually matter.
Right. It's a much different meta.
But that lays out the strengths of pretty much where Destiny and the Time of War is going to stand. Because Destiny, it's vague about it, but the essence is still there when it comes to the skills.
Right. Well, and even in a Time of War, I mean, I think it is mentioned that one of the things they emphasize is that a Time of War, and now Destiny even more so, is that it is role-playing, R-O-L-E, and not role-playing, R-O-L-L. So the idea is, you know, if you can avoid rolling dice for something, it's probably better. You know, can you as a person make a compelling argument for what you're doing and why you're doing it and how you're going to do it versus, well, I'm just going to roll some dice.
Yeah, you're dropping the crunchiness.
Yeah.
Let's see. What else can we touch on?
Well, I think
right now I got rules of engagement in that section, which is basically build your character.
Yeah. I think the big thing for me is the Q system, that's what I'm hesitant about. And you know, narration turns.
How creative can you honestly be with cues, to tell you the truth? Because if you read some of the example cues in there, it's like they just turned on like Alien and they just copied like...
Yeah.
What I mean?
Well, it's funny because...
Like, is that? I don't understand. Like, I'm looking at it outside of the box. Like, when am I ever going to be like, kill the meat, save the metal? You know, like in the middle of a freaking battle. Like, how is that going to get me into the game?
It's so
lame.
odd pause with the person you're in the bar with. And then, like, you just come up with that, you know? I guess for me is...
I don't know, seduction roll. Am I going to shout that?
It's the NPC just ripping her clothes off.
Yeah, I just blew that out of the water. I don't know. I guess I like the Q system now.
I guess, you know, it's for me, you know, the idea is that, you know, if you're going to be role playing, like, you're going to kind of come up with what your character is going to be like, and you're going to be rewarded by the GM for maintaining character. And, you know, in Dungeons and Dragons, you know, it's chaotic, neutral, or, you know, lawful good or whatever. I remember one of the last games of Dungeons and Dragons I played, one of the guys, I think he was a halfling paladin whose deity was Shellen, who was, you know, a deity of lawful goodness. And, like, he stuck to character so well, and he would have a phrase. Like, he was also he was a halfling paladin, but also like a surfer pothead. So if there's something you agree with, he'd be like, "That's so Shellen."
Come on.
Or if someone did something like, "That's not very Shellen."
Oh man.
And that's one of those things. Like, I don't know. Like, do you need a cue system? Do you need to take up a chunk of the record sheet with cues like that?
Well, shoot, I played a, I think it was a Drow Rogue in 4th edition, and my own party basically left me to die because I was being a rogue, a Drow Rogue, and I was stealing from my own party.
Yeah. Yeah.
So yeah, I didn't need no cues to do that. I knew what I was doing.
Well, I just wonder, like, is it... And that's the cue system, and is that, you know, a holdover from Shadowrun Anarchy and Cosmic Patrol, or is it something new? I think one of the things I've gathered is that the whole use of the GM seems to be, and the emphasis on the GM being sort of a judge or referee in Destiny is a bit different than it was in the previous systems, which is probably good, but...
maybe we just can't wrap our brains around it yet.
Right, because it may not even be that different, and it may just be where I'm getting annoyed by things that are probably not actually a problem. But the queue system has me kind of nervous because it feels as though
it's definitely different.
Yeah. Like there's spots in those record sheets for characters that could probably be used by something else, or like general references for how you do things. You know, like in Pathfinder, they've got this sidebar that has a list of skills and whether or not you're trained in it and like what your bonuses are to that skill. And it would be nice to see.
Well, a list of cues outside of one-liners would probably be helpful.
Yeah.
So you can at least guide people in the right direction, because that's the only thing I get from it, just like one-liners. Like, let's say like everybody's in a slump. They don't really know what to do. You're basically going to be like, time's up. Let's do this.
Yeah,
like,
yeah.
Out of nowhere. And it's like, what are you talking about? We're all in a restaurant.
Yeah. Well, because the game emphasizes pushing the storyline. So the way the queue system works is that rather than you rolling for initiative, there's the GM, and then everyone moves in a clockwise fashion from the GM. So the person to the left goes first, and then it goes around the table. It emphasizes fast decision making and try and keep the story moving, but it also seems very loose. Like it seems as though the GM kind of puts out the rough setting and controls the NPCs, but at the same time, it's up to the characters what they see in their environment to a sense, which is very weird to me because, you know, I'm used to it. You know, the world is crafted by the GM. You know, what's there is there. If a character wants to make a you know, say something like, I want to look around and see what doors there are. The GM can say whether or not there's a door there. But in the narration system, it seems that anyone can decide there's a door there, or anyone can decide, you know, who's in the restaurant or the bar. And
well, it does seem like I remember vaguely reading it in there that they do basically have single and complex actions.
Still in there.
So yeah. If it is somebody's like turn, if they are moving in clockwise,
yeah,
I would think you would still have to at least do an action before you would move on to the next person.
Well, there's narration, and there's combat, and then at the same time they also have something called talk time, and so it's nothing's happening right now. And we're in this location, and we're going to go around and just, you know, what we're doing. So, you know, one character's like, I'm going to go, you know, look on this bookshelf and see what's going on and see what I can find. And this other person just say, I'm going to go keep an eye out on the door and make sure no one's coming in to disturb us. And then there's talk time. And so if there were like four of us in a group, rather than us each taking turns asking questions politely, you know, maybe it's a bit more free form. And it's up to the GM to decide, okay, it's talk time. And the game is designed to be as fast flowing as possible. But then there are examples that, you know, I find something. Well, what do I find? And it almost seems as though it's up to someone to say, oh, on this bookshelf, I find an e-reader, and I turn it on. And, you know, assuming that the GM doesn't throw a plot point like it's password protected. And then, of course, someone could be like, oh, I notice
I'm going to play a plot point. I remember that e-reader.
Yeah, I remember that e-reader. It's like, I'm looking at that portrait of Alexander Kretzky, and I know the password's Rosebud. I just found some cartoons.
Uh-oh.
It's like, oh, I just found an e-reader and I know the password. And so I discover, you know, the schematics on how to make a Devastator battle mech or something.
Plot point. Hold on. I'm going to call Comstar real quick.
Yeah. So it's one of those things I'm just sort of on some of how the queue system.
I think it's ultimately with how they have this built, it's going to depend on the maturity of the group. To tell you the truth, because if it was a group like with you and me and some of our friends, you know from experience, like we've even had Alpha Strike games drag on so much that we're like, look, man, we're just gonna take the loss so you don't have to completely scrap your campaign idea.
Yeah,
like we've done that on occasion.
Yeah, I sort of it's one of those things. I don't like how loose it is. Like I feel as though if we had more of a structured Pathfinder feel where there's a GM who's crafted the world, and like there's stuff you're gonna have to make up on the fly, but you're crafting the world and you're answering questions and you're sort of forming things along a narrative structure, but it's got a rules light approach. I like that, but Destiny seems more like here's a rough sketch and a rules light approach, and it's up to the players to craft things.
Yeah,
and I feel that's a bit too.
Our vague is a little bit different than their vague.
Yeah.
Like I do like it being vague, mm-hmm. but they still need to kind of hold people's hands through this. They need to kind of throw in some ideas, which is why I would think breaking up the fiction in the beginning.
Yeah.
And actually showing like a progress, like kind of like, okay, this is the fiction. We're going to apply this to Destiny. Show you how a game would sort of work.
Yeah. Yeah.
That would be a better way to present the rules.
Yeah.
Than what they kind of have now. Because that's why you're wondering. I looked at it, you know, kind of like how it was built in like a novel. Like, okay, I could kind of see that. Like, oh, well, looks like Kai Ellard Liao played a plot point and at the end of it, and he's actually a spy.
Yeah. or you mean Justin?
Or Justin. My bad, Justin.
But yeah, the game just feels as though it'd be too easy to get off the rails. And it feels as though getting off the rails is the point of what they're trying to achieve. And that's not so much what I like. You know, I feel as though... this is sort of the thing, like, why I... Tangent. This is why I kind of really dislike Neon Genesis Evangelion and a lot of Japanese anime. Because to me, it's sort of like, okay, I get it, Shinji. You're depressed. I get it. You're having a hard time with things. Take a Prozac. Take a Xanax. Get in the fucking robot to the fucking world and get over it.
Cloud, get over your fucking demons.
Yeah. But it's just sort of like, but then it's like, in Destiny, it's like, oh, but I'm really depressed and I'm going to sit and mope and... it's going to be that for like half the show. And yet somehow we're going to be the best animated Japanese animated television series of all time. And nobody can wait until it gets to Netflix. And I say that knowing like, I really like a lot of character driven storylines.
I feel like we could just sit here and talk about Final Fantasy VII.
It's the fucking best, man. I don't know what you're talking about. But I just like that. That's what Destiny seems like. Destiny seems like, It's a Japanese anime kind of gone off the rails where you're just sitting there watching characters screaming at each other and then moping around and not getting to the point. And that's one of the things, like as an RPG, you're not so much into character arcs. Like you've got your character and that's kind of your character. And maybe he or she can change and grow. But like your character sort of helps judge how you'd behave in a situation and how you solve a problem. And Destiny seems to be more...
I see it more like Predator and Alien. Aliens.
Yeah. Well, really?
Yeah.
How so?
Well, it's your cheesy like action movie.
Well, yeah. So well,
that's pretty much how I look at it.
It talks about like doing these impossible things.
Your cue is that sick, what... handshake.
Yeah, but it just sort of seems as though I don't know. It just sort of seems like it's so easy to get off the rails and so easy to just mire around in bullshit. Oh, man.
Dude, I want to make Duke Nukem in MechWarrior Destiny now.
Oh. Sure, man. I mean, it's like you got all the one-liners. I'm going to make Doom Guy into MechWarrior Destiny. He's going to have no cues.
No, your cue is all of the weapons that you carry.
Yeah, yeah. He's not going to be saying anything. He's going to be silent and just carry a shotgun. Whenever it, like, nothing happens, you just hear the loading of a shotgun. Another chamber slam, another round slams home in the chamber.
Oh, man. Well, there's all the gripe against the Q system right there.
Yeah, so I mean, and that's my problem. And maybe I'm wrong. And if one of you guys wants to kind of, you know, in the comments, because
I actually think it's fine. I just think it needs to be expanded on.
Yeah. What I would like to see is the GM have more power to kind of get to the point of a story. Because I've seen RPG games get off the rails, and I see them get off the rails in systems that are more GM focused. And to see a game that's even less GM focused, yeah, it just feels like, you know, like the end of Avengers. Well, what do you do? Well, we didn't save the world, but we went to get shawarma. We decided to skip the end and didn't want to bother with it, so we got shawarma.
Please don't tell me you're going to say Destiny's like Suicide Squad.
I don't. I can't even watch Suicide Squad.
Well, do yourself a favor and don't.
Yeah.
Let's see. What else can we get into? We already pretty much went over turns, queues.
Yeah. I think
construction's nice.
Yeah, I mean, I haven't. It's one of those things, and this is part of the problem with. So I'm 35. Dan, you're what, 34, 35?
Yeah, 34.
Yeah. So, you know, we're still part of that transition generation of the millennials, and when stuff's on PDF like this, it gets really hard to stay focused. Like, if it was hard copy in front of me, it'd be so much easier. Yeah,
I can guarantee you I've probably missed a couple things. I am much better with a print copy than a PDF.
Yeah, yeah.
It has to do with how, I don't know, maybe like the rays come off of like your computer monitor. I cannot hold attention to that as well as I can a book.
Yeah, yeah. Well, and I think part of it too is, and maybe it's a bias, because I ran through two very long articles on Rolling Stone about King Crimson online. And I did that no problem way late into the night, because they were pretty long articles. But something about this, it's for whatever reason, it's not keeping my attention. And
yeah, I'd still struggle with it. Yeah. It's still hard for me. Yeah, construction is actually pretty nice. I've messed with it and made a couple characters. Yeah. It's kind of weird how strength isn't tied into anything, though.
It just seems like its strength is melee attacks.
It's more like body.
Yeah. One of the things that I find cool about Destiny that is interesting, although I think it's kind of ironic considering how many times people complain about rolling dice in Battletech/Total Warfare, but the way Destiny tends to work is that there's something you want to do, and it's all about your dice roll and the modifiers you add on. And then the dice that the GM then rolls based on...
Or opponent,
yeah. How difficult that thing is. And that's pretty neat. It's a little bit simpler. I think it's different from, like, you know, Dungeons & Dragons, where it's like, okay, that's a... You got your D20, and you gotta roll a 25 or higher with your modifiers based on how difficult that thing is to do.
It'd be interesting to see two hackers compete with each other if you get in that scenario.
Yeah, yeah. And so seeing opposing die rolls is interesting, and I think it has some interesting things for combat, both personal and with battle mechs.
Yeah.
But at the same time...
Your gunnery is competing with your opponent's piloting.
Yeah.
So it makes more sense why you would see... Like, let's say you have a guy who's like a standard gunner, but he's, let's say, like a one pilot, a one or zero. You know, that guy's going to be dodging bullets like no tomorrow.
Yeah.
That was really interesting to see. That one kind of threw me off a bit.
Well, and that makes things like, especially, you know, how good, say, like, an ace pilot is, like Natasha Kerensky, you know, a 0-0.
Oh, yeah.
Or I think even like -1 gunnery and 0 piloting. Like, in, I can't remember which book that it's in. I think I want to say it's More Tales of the Black Widow. Like, it's insane how, you know, she could go up against a whole lance of battle mechs and not even be scratched, because using MechWarrior Destiny, she could just constantly, like, roll, you know, 2d6 against, you know, what the opponent's gunnery is, and just they would whiff all the time. One of the things that kind of bothers me, though, is you know, we're talking about this, you know, these square system where...
Embrace the hexagons, please.
Yeah, yeah. Everything's sort of really abstract. And so there's not actually map sheets. It's sort of how you are in relation to your opponent. And distance is abstracted into sort of squares, you know, whether you're short, medium, long, or out of range.
Which is both for personal and augmented combat.
And it's I don't know. I mean, I guess it's the abstraction's interesting, but I feel like if you've got multiple things going on, the map sheet, like, how does it actually work? And it's one of those things. Destiny seems to be doing too many things at once. It seems to be simplifying role playing. It seems to be trying to attract new players, and it seems to be wanting to be a bridge between an RPG setting and the more technical tabletop setting, but it can't do all these things at once because Destiny seems so far removed from what Total Warfare or even Alpha Strike is that how do you get someone then into the standard tabletop game?
Because your abstract meta combat is different.
Yeah, and there's even like little things in the beta that bother me. Like you look at a battle mech record sheet, which is incredibly simplified from Total Warfare, but they've actually flipped the locations on the record sheet. So I don't know if you noticed that, Dan, but when you look at the traditional battle mech record sheet.
I would just mark it like a traditional battle tech sheet without even noticing it, to tell you the truth.
So in the traditional sheet, it's a mirror image. So the battle mech's right side is to your right.
Like to your actual right.
And where in this one, it's actually as though the battle mech is facing you. So the battle mech's right is on your left. And that's not a big deal, except you're going against 35 years of how a record sheet's been made. Which is sort of one of those little things like, why would you, why now? And maybe it's not a big deal. Maybe it's not a big deal. But it just seems like one of those things like, I'd flip that back. Because if you want to get any bleed over, that's what you got to do.
Now, did you play with did you look at the conversion at all?
I looked very, very briefly. I think, and I'm still not quite certain if everything on Mech-Scale Combat is single locations, like per weapons group.
Yeah, it is. I asked, and it definitely is. Yeah. So, I mean, just as an example, like your Battlemaster, you would have your PPC as your primary weapon, and then you would have, let's say you put all your medium lasers in one group, which you would suffer to heat and everything from.
Yeah.
Which, I mean,
it's... Well, and they call it target interlock circuits, which makes sense. I mean, the way they describe it makes sense. But in Total Warfare...
Everything hits a different spot.
Yeah, yeah. So maybe if you wanted to, and there are rules for grouping weapons, you could put all your medium lasers in one group, and you roll, and they either all hit or they all whiff. But each medium laser, in the case of the Battlemaster, four of them, each at a different location.
That's something we would do.
Right, which is huge, because if you can just pop four medium lasers into one single target interlock group and they all hit the same location, why take an autocannon 20 when you can take four medium lasers?
Which, even then, we would probably stick with weapon groups too, because you have to kind of have the groups to determine how much heat you actually generate too.
Yeah.
So it is a good idea to still put things in groups. But I like the idea, like, you would roll just one time for all four of those medium lasers, and if they hit, you're rolling location for each of them.
Yeah.
I think that would probably be the best way to do it. You know, opinions out there might differ, because, I guess people hate rolling dice. But that would... Yeah, it seems really weird to me, especially because of how downscaled armor is.
Yeah.
I mean, if you look at there actually is a clan section in this book.
Right.
And you look at the Nova, my God, I cringe.
Yeah, yeah, it's like, yeah.
You gotta be kidding me.
Because I looked at some of the record sheets that came with Destiny, and it makes it seem as though, why would you take anything else other than a Nova? Because a Nova would just melt.
Why do you need an autocannon 20 at that point?
Yeah.
Why would you take something other than...
Yeah.
You would just take the swayback instead of like a regular hunchback.
Hunchback, yeah.
There's no point.
And it's a beta. It's a beta. Things could change.
Yeah.
But I don't know. I mean, maybe they won't. I mean, that's...
I mean, as far as like the abstract Met comment, I don't really have much of an opinion about it because it's something I probably wouldn't use because I could see us using the Total Warfare conversion and just sticking with that.
Yeah.
Or we would do what some people on the forums have actually talked about doing is basically taking mech scale combat from Destiny and just adding in Alpha Strike movement and weapon ranges. Which I think that's a pretty decent idea.
I mean, I think one of the things too that I would consider is that, you know, if you're playing Destiny, you know, chances are you've made a battle mech pilot that's probably pretty good. And it would be interesting to see sort of a Total Warfare mech sheet, kind of with a little bit of Destiny's rules thrown in, like the competing paladin skill role.
Oh yeah, I believe that's in the conversion.
Yeah. So it kind of like, you know, for those of you who are grognards and have spent way too much time reading your original print edition TRO 3025, it's fallen apart.
We've all done it.
I love that there's this entry on the awesome, and I can't remember the name of the pilot, but it's a female pilot in the notable mech warrior section. And she's in an awesome of all mechs, and she's renowned for being able to sidestep flights of missiles launched at her awesome. And you know, the awesome's a slow mech, and then being renowned for being able to do that. Like that's cool stuff. And being able to play that in Destiny is really cool. And it's clear that the writers have flipped to those books just as much as we have.
Yeah. You know? Hey, shoot. Adam Steiner with that axe? Come on, man.
Yeah, yeah.
that piloting skill is gonna come in handy.
Hell yeah.
So I mean, I understand why they're doing the abstract combat though. It does look interesting. It does spark a little bit of an interest in me. It might be something I'd be willing to give a shot, but I could see us more taking the Total Warfare route with it. Mm-hmm. Or even Alpha Strike and just using like their chart, like just trying to find a more abstract way to deal with it.
Yeah.
Just on a hex map. I mean, obviously I would much rather have it on a hex map anyways. It's easier to keep track of.
Yeah, whereas what?
Way easier.
Yeah.
And I mean, you can even still use how Destiny handles mech scale combat. Like even with their conversion, like you saw how they have movement. Like you're like, let's take like a Fire Moth. It would be like 4.
Yeah.
Instead of like, you would probably just use like the movement rating for Alpha Strike where it's like moving 10. But for purposes of like combat, you would calculate it as you would with Destiny. So you would, you know, subtract like the TMM or whatever from it. I don't know if you saw that.
I saw a little bit.
There's like a difference in TMM depending on how far you move.
Yeah.
That like lowers or like raises it. That might be something to do because obviously Destiny takes a lot in consideration that we haven't tried yet. You know, and with if they're having gunnery compete with piloting.
Yeah.
Let's see. What else do we got here? I don't know. Even abstract, it does look a lot like Total Warfare. I mean, it obviously leaves out a lot, but looks like they took a lot in consideration. Like punches and kicks, all that's still in there. Charge, damage. Yeah, the only weird thing is like how weapon groups work. That's the only thing that really bothers me.
Yeah, because it's almost like if weapons are going to be grouped like that, they're going to do that much damage. I mean, what's even the point of using a reduced, you know, what's the point of even scaling those things like that? You know, why not just use a standard armor diagram? I mean, is it just because you can fit armor and internal structure on the same silhouette, you know, the same outline of the battle mech? I mean, is that the only reason why? Because it's just sort of one of those things like, you know, if a Nova is going to do that much damage per weapon group, I mean, you're just going to destroy a Locust in one hit, right?
Nah. It's why I'm glad they put the clan section in here because, my God, I mean, clan tech will just show you how broken something can get.
Oh, that's oh, we haven't even got, oh, man.
I guess this is kind of a preview. We're going to go into something later.
Just
a lot of it's similar. Heat effects and all of that. Damage to buildings, blah, blah, blah. See, building your destiny. Did you read any of that?
Yeah, I haven't.
Yeah, I haven't gotten that far either. Yeah. Who knows? That might answer a lot of our questions too.
It might. It might. I mean, I see that there's a little bit that's going on. I think this is the GM section.
Yeah. They. I mean, they have examples in here.
Yeah.
For well, I mean, obviously, character creation.
I mean, they really emphasize the free form and like sort of the liquid flow of the system, especially with plot points. So the way plot points work is that you have so many plot points, and of course, by doing cool things, you can be rewarded fractions or whole plot points by the GM.
Mm-hmm.
And you can use a plot point to do things. You can go out of order for that turn. You can notice something or change situation. And then, of course, for every plot point a player character uses...
The GM gets it.
The GM gets it. But the GM is limited as well. The GM cannot use things with malice, you know? It can't just be like, oh, that character's really pissed me off, or that player's really pissed me off, so I'm going to do something to really screw him over. It's supposed to be used sort of indirectly to change the situation. And so maybe one of those things, like one of the examples is, you know, for like a head hit in combat does full damage instead of half damage. Or...
Well, you have to use a plot point to hit the cockpit.
Yeah. So there are things that you can do by using plot points that can mix things up. Or... You notice something, or you have a piece of tech, or you're able to crack a code on something, and then the GM can find a way to kind of change things around. Like, oh, you know, that piece of pavement is actually covered in oil or something like that, and then you have to slip on it, or like maybe you have to do like a saving throw to not slip on that pavement, and maybe you do slip. So there are things that the plot point system does that is interesting. It basically allows a series of wild cards to be thrown. And it leaves it open to imagination. It leaves it open to excitement. And they kind of really emphasize that idea. And that plot point is different from Edge.
Edge is mostly like dice rolls or like adding to your roll result.
Yeah. So like you roll a bad... die, you can use an edge point to re-roll it. And of course, obviously, that's a limited resource as well.
I think you get it back per scenario.
Yeah.
Which is like kind of normal for...
Yeah, and so, I mean, plot points aren't even really... plot points aren't even really a problem. I think they're actually pretty neat. It just, for me, it gets back to how does the game flow with this whole narrative, talk time, open play structure versus a more standard...
Yeah, they definitely need to... lay out how they want plot points to actually be used.
Yeah. Because, I mean, Battletech for a long time has been about, you know, the plot-driven experience. You know, the here's the problem, here is the invaded planet, here's how I go about this. And, you know, I've been a part of D&D campaigns where it's like, well, you know what, we're going to ignore this invasion of our home country. We're going to kind of go over here and do whatever else. And it just feels like Destiny would allow someone to be like, ah, you know what? I don't really care that the Draconis Combine has invaded this planet. I'm going to go pick up chicks.
Here we go. Yeah, see, they got... I kind of like how the missions, you can just basically have it all on one page, though.
Yeah.
That is very easy to look at. And again, like, I don't know if it's just because of what we're used to. How would you... honestly work with that?
Yeah, they make missions seem like an episode of a TV show. You got your mission, which is a whole episode, and then you've got your scenes. And so like take your traditional Power Rangers or your traditional Scrubs episode, or hey, even like the original Star Wars trilogy, you got your introduction of the problem in scene one. You've got the low point in season two, or scene two, and then you've got the resolution in scene three. And so every Scrubs episode is the same thing. You've got the characters introduced. You know, Dr. Cox is giving JD a bunch of crap. Then they meet their current patient. Scene two is after the first commercial break, and something happens. You know, someone's feelings are legitimately hurt. The patient gets sick. He's gonna die. And then scene three is either they save the patient or they spend their time dealing with and coming, you know, emotionally recuperating from the death of the patient. And so that's what I think this is. Your mission is your episode, and your scenes are individual points before each commercial break. And within each of those scenes are the number of narrative turns to resolve that scene.
Our group would totally have it like a South Park episode.
Yeah.
Who's going to be Randy?
Man Bear Pig.
Oh my gosh.
Well, that's the problem. Are you going to be the group that makes fun of Al Gore because Man Bear Pig is fake? And it's his joke, or is it going to be
an episode of House?
Or is it going to be the second episode that came 10 seasons later where Man Bear Pig is real?
Oh my God. So could it be like the Jihad?
Yeah. Have you seen that episode?
The Man Bear Pig real one?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, okay. Just make it sure.
I don't want to give up soy sauce. Are you kidding? I guess we could bargain with them.
Yeah.
Let's see. So yeah, we got mission briefings. Let's see. Warriors catalog. I like to see more traits.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. They basically leave it open. Like, you can't actually make up your own traits.
Well, and they do mention it with the GM is that, you know, like you can even modify your own weapons. And I think the example they give is, you know, the idea is like, okay, you know, I want this pistol that does a knockdown after the person's been hit by it.
Yeah.
And they make it more like, well, you know, it's okay. It's not going to be an automatic knockdown. Like maybe it takes like a saving throw by the
person. I got a silencer on my pistol.
Yeah. Yeah. When it comes down to it, I mean, Destiny's got potential, but there are things that I'm sort of concerned about, and I think it comes down to, again, what support is there? And is there any help for a burgeoning GM to try and figure out how to best play the game? Which is where BattleTech's been sort of lacking with the Time of War.
You poor GM.
Yeah.
Let's see. Life modules. Yeah, I'd like to see a little more on that too. I would like to see, like, if you choose like what faction you are, maybe some benefits and some consequences for choosing a faction. Otherwise, I think everything else is pretty good.
Yeah,
it's so vague, but it does accomplish what it needs to accomplish.
Yeah, I think there was some concern about is there enough differences between the different houses to make one worth, you know, taking one over the other? And I don't want to see things sort of like, oh, if you're a Draconis Combine Mech War, you've got a better gunnery than, you know, it's like that's not very real to the universe. But maybe some sort of ways that you react or, you know, weaknesses that you get.
You get a plus one on a certain attribute and like a minus one on a different attribute.
Yeah. Like a Draconis Combine, I think, for example, you know, you're sort of hamstrung by the broken form of Bushido that the DCMS utilizes. And then the Capellan Confederation has like, it was like the Lorax Order. And so you're maybe sort of shoehorned in sort of how you view society because of that. If you're a mech warrior in the Capellan Confederation,
so it'd be like a negative modifier on charisma.
Yeah, like there are ways that can make things. Or, well, and this is where the Q system comes in. Like, does it have to necessarily affect a role? Should it affect the way you tend to interact with other NPCs? And not that you have to act that way, because you know you can become more than your background, both in real life and in the game. But there's got to be something in there that sort of affects how you do things. Because obviously, if you're from Clan Wolf, you're not so fussed about freeborn mech warriors. But if you're from the Steel Vipers, you're really fussed about freeborn mech warriors.
If you're Jade Falcon, you're just fussed about everything.
Yeah, you got the biggest fucking stick up your ass.
If you're Smoke Jaguar, you're just a crater.
Yeah.
Oh, man. Oh, I just started the war, didn't I?
Yeah. Oh, man, we have so many things. We've been talking for about an hour now. We have so many things to talk about still.
Have we really been talking for an hour?
We haven't even... I better double check. We haven't even gotten into how much Alexander Kerensky sucks. Oh, yeah, man. Hour 13.
Wow.
Yeah. Or hour and 17 seconds. Yeah. Oh, man. Can you believe that? Oh, that'll really make people angry. You know, how much... I think Alexander Kerensky sucked at his job.
Oh, man.
Not that I don't like him as a character.
Oh, yeah, he's a great character. Don't get me
but,
wrong.
But, yeah. Oh, man, the poor Terran hegemony.
That's where the Ameris's right joke keeps coming from.
Yeah. But, yeah, let's see. Do you think we got enough time for the Tarkus story?
I think we should touch on that. Maybe we'll save... What was the other thing we want to talk about? Like aesthetics.
Yeah.
We might have to save that for a different episode. I had no idea Destiny would take us to like a full hour.
Yeah, it did.
Such a vague game.
Yeah,
it demanded so much detail.
So here's my story on the Tarkus tank. We live in Joliet, and in Joliet there was a game store called Challenge Games. They used to have one in the Fox Valley Mall. And then that closed down, and then Challenge Games kind of moved to a couple different places. So this was during the 2000s when, you know, MMORPGs were becoming really big, and people kind of stopped going to stores. And then in our area, Challenge Games was in one of the malls that was slowly dying, and they moved across the street. After that mall, that land was bought out and turned into a Menards and Walmart.
Oh, that old Montgomery Ward.
Yeah, and then they moved from that place to a different place and renamed themselves Patriot Games. And then at that point, I mean, the guys who were running it were just, they just wanted to retire. But Dan, if you want, can you grab, do you have a copy of TRO 3025?
Sure
do. So the guys who ran Challenge Games actually used to work for FASA. And they had opened up Challenge Games. And they were around at a time when... Games Workshop games were exploding. And at one point, they had a life-size Warhammer 40K Space Marine at the front of their store. So these guys were named L.R. Butch Leaper. And he would not tell me his first name. And he said, if I ever found out his first name, he'd kill me. And the other guy was Forrest Brown. And I don't know if Butch is still alive. I know Forrest passed away a couple of years ago. He wasn't a very healthy dude. You could tell, like, he just was one of those guys where being white and being a senior citizen just hit him really, really hard. You know, I think he has diabetes. I think he was later confined to a wheelchair. He might have had congestive heart failure. But what made me really sad is that I didn't find out that these were the guys that were in these early BattleTech books until like right before they decided to close down, and I think they retired to Kentucky. And I think, you know, Forrest had a daughter who was a, you know, dog groomer, and in the end they ended up being really, really cool guys. But they didn't talk about anything about BattleTech because this was in, you know, 2000s, and like they had a little bit of BattleTech on the shelf, but everything was GW. So when they had finally moved to their final location and they renamed themselves Patriot Games, you know, I started talking to them, and, you know, they had their writing credits. I think one of them, you know, wrote for the, you know, created the Banshee. And of course, Forrest was in the military. I think he served in Vietnam. And so his experience, especially with military technology and military equipment, was sort of, you know, sometimes who gets the contract doesn't make the best piece of gear. You know, it is what it is. Or maybe what they thought they were making didn't perform the way they thought it would. And, you know, TRO 3025 is just full of examples like that. And, of course, part of the thing about BattleTech is finding out how to make those things work. You know, i.e. the Gargoyle Prime actually kicks ass if you know what you're doing.
That's why there's like an Assassin fan club. You know, there's some OS fan clubs.
Yeah. They got one member, and his name is Dan.
Yeah. No, Bishop Steiner does like the Assassin, too. Don't even try that with me.
But yeah, so I got around to talking to Forrest and Butch, and they were around from the beginning, and they knew Jordan Wiseman, and they ended up being really cool guys to talk to, and they had lots of good tips on wargaming and all that stuff. And it was just sort of a shame because they were there for when a lot of in-store hobby shops and, like, you know, tabletop gameplay in the hobby shop was sort of on the way out. And I was there at a time when, you know, you would go and there were 10 tables and 9 of them were Warhammer players. And then it was me and a friend, like the only two dudes playing Battletech on mismatched terrain because, you know, everything else was, you know, we were whatever the millimeter is that we were playing, like 6 millimeter. And then everybody else was playing like 25 or 28 millimeter. And that's just the way it was. But anyway, so I ended up getting to talk to them and they had a long history in the hobby industry. And this kind of gets into a lot of things with Battletech. So Battletech's very much a product of the 80s, but it's also kind of a product of the 70s because you can see there's a lot of Dune references. And a lot of those writers listened to a lot of 1970s British progressive rock. And it's sort of kind of, you see it in the artwork. You know, there's a lot of, you know, heavy metal or metal hurlant inspiration. So a lot of Jean Moebius Giraud shows up in a lot of the artwork. You can kind of see that influence. And you can see a lot of Roger Dean and stuff too, from like the who did the Yes covers. But Forrest Brown at one point with, I think maybe with Butch, they were trying to make a miniatures war game based off of the creatures in Emerson, Lake and Palmer's Tarkus album cover. So Tarkus, I think, was their second album and it's awesome. And it has this great song on there called Bitches Crystal, which has an even a more amazing cover performed by the group Kango, who featured the drummer from Emerson, Lake and Palmer, Carl Palmer, and then the singer of King Crimson, UK and Asia, John Wetton, who's an amazing singer. And that was like a live recording from the 2000s.
Bitches, so, what?
Bitches Crystal. Bitches is in plural, or bitch, sorry, as a possession. So bitch slash, or bitch comma S. And so on there, on that Tarkus album cover is this tank, is armadillo with treads and sponsoon turrets on the side. And lo and behold, in this miniature display case in Patriot Games was a motherfucking Tarkus tank. And I was like, oh my God, how do I get that? Where is that from? And the guy was like, I got some left, but you don't have enough money in the world for it. And he was telling me the story, like what they wanted to do. And they were trying to make this miniatures game off of it. And they had a master and printings done of that Tarkus tank. And I wanted it so goddamn bad. And now Forrest is dead. And I got no idea if I will ever get it. And it was made out of lead pewter. And it was big and beefy and beautiful. And man, I wish I could have it. So yeah, those guys who did Battletech, I mean, they were into 1970s progressive rock and they were into all sorts of different things. And it was kind of cool that I got to talk with them. And I just wish I could have talked to them more when they were still around slash alive because they were really nice dudes.
Man, I missed out.
Yeah. Yeah. They were, I mean, and it's funny. I think part of the thing was is that they were more open to talking about it because they made it seem as though when they left FASA, it wasn't under the best of circumstances. Like maybe money was owed or something, or maybe they just got into a fight. But when Games Workshop started opening up their stores and they had these really onerous contracts, like, okay, you can sell my Games Workshop merchandise, but you have to have 50% of your shelves devoted to GW gear. And that was fine when everyone was playing Warhammer nonstop. But when Warhammer hit a blip and there was other stuff that became more popular, it was hard to meet those demands. And I think in the end, them losing the GW sales probably hurt them more than they could recover from because that was the industry. And at the time, for a while there, it wasn't an issue because that was when like the Lord of the Rings tactical board game or tactical like tabletop game came out. And there was Warhammer. There was Warhammer 40K. There was Blood Bowl. And then they even had like a 3D Blood Bowl stadium that they made out of, you know, styrene and blue board.
Weren't the WizKids click games kind of popular too?
Yeah, very briefly.
Like brief, yeah.
I have a feeling like the WizKids click stuff.
It's like HeroClix.
Yeah, it was good for like a couple years, yeah. And then it tanked. Which I think is one of those things coming to realize as we get older, like how short some things actually are. You know, that's what makes BattleTech special. It's lasted so long. But yeah, that's my Tarkus tank story and how it connects to BattleTech. So if you guys ever get the chance, you should totally check out Emerson, Lake, and Palmer's Tarkus album, and definitely check out their song "Bitches Crystal" because it is awesome. So I think I rambled on long enough because I think I pushed us another 10 minutes. All right,
there we go. For a minute there, I was like, oh man, we're going to have to start talking about aesthetics now. We're already getting into the 80s. Talking about
so yeah, that'll be next time.
Designs were made.
So yeah, well, guys, thank you for tuning into episode 2. I hope we didn't bore you. I hope it was worth it.
We will be back.
Yeah, episode 3. Yeah,
oh,
whatever.
Oh, it's going to be aesthetic.
Maybe we'll skip episode 3 and go right to episode 4.
Yeah, Kerensky.
Well, cool. Well, thank you very much, guys. And take care. And I guess we'll, I don't know, we'll figure out a catchphrase later.
I don't know. Kill the meat, save the metal.
I don't know. I'm not feeling it.
It's a little too much.
Yeah. Fuck Harmony Gold.
Everybody does that.
Bye, guys.
Bye-bye.